Just a warning before we start, this episode contains some pretty graphic descriptions of animals in trauma. Today, will Australia's wildlife recover from this bushfire season? I'm Laura Murphy-Oates, and this is The Full Story.
Now then, as a result of Australia's ongoing terrible wildfires, it's believed that a staggering 1 billion animals have been killed across the country.
Images of Australia's native animals suffering during the bushfire crisis have been beamed around the world. Now, with rain and changing weather conditions bringing relief to some areas, the devastating impact on our wildlife is becoming clear. There's estimates that 1 billion animals have died, with many threatened species hit hard, and fears that some of our unique plants and animals have been pushed to extinction.
As the scale of the ecological disaster becomes clearer, it emerged today that some koala populations could be officially listed as endangered. The federal government says koalas took an extraordinary...
One of the places hit hardest is Kangaroo Island.
Kangaroo Island is it's just off South Australia, just off Adelaide to the south.
Graeme Redfern is an environment reporter at The Guardian.
It's a beautiful place.
And there's no better description for this mind-blowing place than remarkable.
It's got this azure, sort of blue waters. It's got these granite cliffs coming down, these spots of sort of bright green shrubs. I mean, it's crazy. It's postcard stuff. Particularly the western side of the island, around Flinders Chase National Park.
Here, there's platypuses.
It's home to a whole bunch of threatened species. It's also home to some subspecies of species that are already threatened.
Dunnarts are marsupials, so they carry their young in a pouch.
Which is like a little marsupial mouse. Gorgeous, cute little thing.
And there's about 19 species in Australia, but only one is found on Kangaroo Island.
Ecologists actually move there to do studies, and then a lot of them just hang around and never go back to the mainland. And now about a third of it has been burned. I think a lot of the damage on Kangaroo Island was done sort of around the New Year period when these two fires started in the Flinders Chase National Park. That really took hold in this heavily sort of forested native forest area. Two people lost their lives. About 155,000 hectares were burnt over the course of sort of 3 or 4 days, as I understand it. And the fire, though, just kept going, sort of spot fires. It just continued to sort of creep eastwards. That, though, has given kind of some of the conservationists a chance to kind of go back round the other side to start to try and understand what's going on. It's enabled people to get in, essentially, because there's nothing else left to burn.
What was happening in Kangaroo Island sounded so awful, we felt that we could go here and probably do the most as hands-on field people here on the island.
In the wake of these fires, a whole bunch of conservation and wildlife organisations kind of pack their bags and get on over to Kangaroo Island.
So I'm Erica Martin. I'm the CEO of Humane Society International Australia.
They're a conservation group. They're really concerned about animal welfare issues and conservation as well. Now, they went in along with a lot of locals and lots of people on the ground, and they start to do these sort of mass searches and rescues on the island, going through this sort of burnt landscape.
Possum. We just pulled them out of the fire.
Good job, love.
Our first day out was... I can't put into words how horrific it is on the ground. Mm-hmm. We walked out there, and you're literally stepping over the charred corpses of koalas, kangaroos, wallabies. It's nothing short of apocalyptic.
Can you describe what that looks like, what the landscape looks like when you're walking through it? What do you see and what do you smell? And
It's almost like you've stepped into a world of black and white. You've left your world of colour and you're walking through the landscape. The earth doesn't seem to even be there. It's just coated in thick grey ash, which is dusting up. And then you have these charred remains of animals that are just lying everywhere.
Mm.
It's bleak. It's just this horrifying landscape.
I can't imagine what that's like, just walking through a landscape full of, you know, burnt animals. Do any moments stand out in these rescues?
So there's one particular moment where we went out into a really, really bad area, and we discovered a lone koala just sitting kind of dazed on the ground.
I think it's Ash, and it's just like caked ash.
And we approached very cautiously, and that particular one, as we approached it, just it looked up as if, you know, as if to say help me, which is crazy anthropomorphization, but but it felt like it was asking for help. And once we were able to wrap it up, we wrap it up in a towel.
You're going back to bed. Let's go to bed.
We pop them into laundry baskets. It's not a sophisticated operation, but it works well. And then we get them as fast as we can, depending upon their injury. Some of them, remarkably, are not that injured, and that one didn't appear to have too many physical injuries. It was singed, but didn't appear to be badly burned. Of course, you don't know what they're like in terms of smoke inhalation and other issues, but the vets are really, really doing amazing work here as well.
What do you know about what was the fate of that particular koala? What did you do after you rescued him?
So we take them in, they record the details of the koala, they pop them into line, because we're not the only ones doing this. Locals who live here are bringing wildlife in from their own property. It's essentially a triage system. If you bring in something terribly injured, it goes to the front of the queue.
Mm.
That particular one is still doing well, and we're hopeful it's going to have a full recovery.
That's lovely. That must be a good feeling.
Honestly, it is the feeling. It's, you know, we were down on the first day. It was rough, but the feelings of joy you get when you do scoop some of these poor animals up. You know, yesterday we had a wallaby that we brought in that was badly, badly burned. Its feet were just horrifically burned. And we took it in and it was immediately euthanized by the vets.
Oh, wow.
But even that felt good, if you know what I mean. You know, it would have lived for at least another week, minimum, dying a very, very slow, painful death. And so even those cases, you feel like you're helping.
How often has that happened for you guys, that you've come across an animal that's had to be euthanized?
Thus far, we've been quite lucky. We've only had two. The koalas have all survived up until now, and we're hoping that all of them are going to make it.
So, Graham, we know that there's a lot of koalas on Kangaroo Island. How have they been impacted?
There's something in the order of sort of 25,000 koalas have probably perished in these fires, leaving behind probably another 20,000-25,000. That's pretty devastating, because nobody likes to think of death on a scale like that. They're also one of the few populations of koalas that don't carry this sort of chlamydia disease.
So they're a pretty rare population, and half of them have been wiped out.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
What about other animals on the island? Do we know what the impact has been like on them?
Yeah, they're very worried about the glossy black cockatoos. They're very worried about the Kangaroo Island dunnart. Those two species in particular. The dunnart, it's thought that this is probably kind of the worst impacted mammal in Australia on the back of these fires. They've had at least 80% of the places where we know they are burned.
I think there's serious concerns for the Dunnart. It's one of the species that's possibly most at risk of extinction from this event. There were so few animals anyway. There's less than 400 individuals to start with. It's the only place they're found, and where they're found is utterly, utterly decimated. So I don't know if even if that habitat was able to recover, I'm not sure that species is going to be able to. It may be one of the great tragedies, I mean, that for wildlife that comes out of these fires.
Next, the long road ahead for wildlife across Australia. Of course, this is just one island. We know that there's estimates of 1 billion animals that have died in the fires this summer. That seems almost impossibly big, like an impossibly big number. How do you explain that to people, that so many animals have died over the past few months? How did that happen?
Well, firstly, the scale of the fires, the sheer area that's burned this summer, about, you know, roughly 11 million hectares. A lot of that is national park area. And these places are really rich with animals and with biodiversity. There's really important habitats in those places. Now, of course, we get bushfires every year, but the problem is that this is not a normal bushfire season. In those normal seasons, you have fires leave patches. The ecologists call them sort of refuges of unburnt areas that animals can go to. But we haven't had as many of those unburnt patches this season. So you get all these deaths from the fires, but then what comes after that are starvation events. The ones that escape, they don't really escape because they've got nowhere to go, because they got nowhere to feed. So it's the breeding trees, it's the fruits, it's the bugs on the ground. They're not there. So we have animals that survive the fires but then go on to starve. And those that still perhaps manage to find food or are hanging on, they're also in this sort of really open burnt landscape, and that just sort of becomes an open hunting area for feral cats and, on the mainland, feral foxes. So when we think about that 1 billion animals, what we're talking about there are whether the animal died straight away or whether it's hung on for a few days or weeks, that's kind of all part of that huge and terrifying number.
So Australia has seen fires in the past. We see bushfires all the time. And it does seem that these habitats bounce back. Is that different this time?
Some of these areas will bounce back. They're sort of designed to. But what we have to remember is what went on before this bushfire season, this desperately dry year, 2019, the driest year on record and the warmest year on record. And we've had this going on for years and years, where these areas are really under pressure, whether that's from climate change or from clearing. And then you get this sort of unprecedented bushfire season that comes through. And now ecologists are going, well, we don't really have an analogue here. We don't know whether these places are going to recover. And then if they do, will they be the same places that they were before? There's genuine doubts about that.
Right. So this has been a massive and unprecedented summer for bushfires. Have there been any other unusual impacts?
We've seen some unexpected events, I guess, especially in our rivers.
Scenes reminiscent of the devastating Murray-Darling carnage, this time on the Maclay River. Scores of fish suffocated in a stretch of river that locals estimate could be as long as 70 kilometres.
Hundreds of thousands of fish have died in that river. We have these folk that I spoke to. One guy had been fishing the river for 50 years. He took a drive about 100 k's up the river. Every time he stopped, all he really saw was dead fish. I asked him what the impact was going to be on the river, and he said, well, I wouldn't be surprised if every single fish in a 100-kilometre stretch of that river is dead.
Why did these fish kills happen? What actually causes them?
When you get the bushfires close to the rivers, the fires do a couple of things. They take out all the vegetation that holds all the soil in, and they also create a lot of ash If you get a decent rain event, all the soil that would normally sit in the landscape just washes off into the rivers. That then promotes the bacteria that's in the rivers. It's already there. Bacteria starts to grow, sucks in all the oxygen. The fish need the oxygen and they can't get it. So they essentially suffocate. Let's remember as well that the billion animals number doesn't include the fish.
So that estimate that we have doesn't include fish.
Yeah, it doesn't include the fish. It doesn't include all the bats. There's a lot of those. It doesn't include all the frogs. Doesn't include the insects. Doesn't include a whole bunch of other invertebrates.
So we're going to see that number just go up and up.
I don't know if they can really count that high. I don't know if they can count that many. I don't know if there's a reliable number. We just know that the Australian landscape before these bushfires had a lot more living things in it than it does now.
Do we know how many species, how many animals have been pushed towards becoming endangered or even becoming extinct from the bushfires this summer?
This week, the government's released some more figures. They're saying that about 49 listed threatened species have had more than 80% of the places where they exist inside the fire zone. A lot of those are plants. They're saying that among these threatened species that have been affected, 272 plants. 16 mammals, 14 frogs, 9 birds, 7 reptiles, 4 insects, 4 fish, 1 spider species. It's not just the cuddly things. It's the things that hold the habitats together. It's the plants. It's the insects. It's everywhere and it's extensive.
What is the government actually doing in terms of recovery for these species, for the wildlife?
So just in terms of cash, about $25 million for something that they're describing as like an emergency intervention fund. Now, that's going to be spent based on what a panel of experts have been telling the Threatened Species Commissioner. Then there's another sort of $25 million to support sort of more wildlife rescue at a local level. The kind of activities that Humane Society International have been doing and many, many other groups too have been doing.
We're pleased to see that there is going to be an investment in wildlife recovery. $50 million is certainly a good start for helping wildlife recover from that. I think the minister's been fairly clear that it's an initial investment, and we're really relieved to hear that it is an initial investment. This is a massive disaster, and the effect on wildlife and habitat is enormous. It's going to take a lot of money, a lot of time, and a lot of effort to recover.
So what can the government do to help protect Australia's wildlife going forward, to take action?
Well, there's this review now that we're right in the middle of the
Environmental Protection and Biodiversity and Conservation Act, EPBC Act, is our signature piece of environmental legislation.
It's the main federal environment law.
So we are about to embark on the 2019 review, and I'm delighted...
That underplays a lot of this. This environment law, it hasn't been reviewed for 10 years. This is a 10-yearly review. It's due to report in October, but the whole tone, the shape of it is going to change. And you have to think that the conservation groups, the public and some of the politicians will see that this review is going on and say, well, okay, if we ever had an opportunity, here it is. It's laid on a plate for us. We can really reshape our environment laws now.
What has the government said about it so far?
Well, leading up to the review...
You've got something that you want to do that contributes jobs and activity to the regional economy, and you know that you've got to wait that time and go through a process that doesn't seem entirely related to the outcome.
The Environment Minister, Susan Ley, has been talking about...
unnecessary process, unnecessary bureaucracy.
The need to tackle green tape.
See, unnecessary green tape, that's what... You know, that's what we refer to. Let's make that process more efficient, more streamlined.
The things that they see as getting in the way of major projects.
We don't want to be slaves to a regulatory process here. Again, the scientists and I agree. We want to see outcomes.
So this is all about reducing green tape, is it?
Well, green tape means arriving at your outcome more efficiently. We all agree on that. So as I said, the scientists and I were 100%.
You have to think, though, that now with these fires, that tone is going to change.
We have to be doing more. We have to have environmental legislation that genuinely protects animals. We have to be looking after this habitat. We have to be taking what may be tough decisions now, but that will eventually secure what we have left and value this incredible nature that we have. I hope that's what comes of this. I hope that all of these decisions, all of these policies will change in focus somewhat to make people realize how precious what we have is and how easily we can lose it.
That's it for today. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe to the show. Just search for Full Story on whatever app you get your podcasts on. We'd also love to hear what you think about the podcast. So if you're on an app that has ratings and reviews, let us know. Thanks to Graham Redfern for his time. You can read his reporting on the fires and wildlife at theguardian.com. This episode was produced by Joe Koning and Ellen Leibeater, and our executive producers are Miles Martignoni and Gabrielle Jackson. Okay, catch you Friday.